Welcome to the Perimenopausal Mamas Podcast for hormonal mamas who want to reclaim their own natural state of health to thrive and raise healthy kids. I'm Dr. Lisa Weeks, naturopathic doctor in Toronto, Canada. I'm a perimenopausal mama to my toddler named Stuart.
And I'm Dr. Toni Reed. I'm a naturopathic doctor, birth doula, and hypnobirthing educator in Calgary, Alberta. And I'm a perimenopausal mama to my little girl, Frankie. The information in this podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only. It is not meant to substitute professional medical advice. Always consult with your licensed healthcare provider.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Perimenopausal Mamas Podcast. Today, I'm really excited to have a conversation with Dr. Jen Newell, a colleague of mine, a naturopathic doctor and skincare health expert. She helps women overcome acne and other skin disorders, hormonal imbalances, and digestive concerns to achieve a clear, radiant complexion, restored hormonal balance, and renewed digestive function. But what she's most passionate about is supporting women to reclaim their inner glow and to live their healthiest and happiest life. She's the founder of Connected Health and Skin and is committed to helping others resolve frustrating skin issues because she struggled with hormonal cystic acne and mild rosacea for over 10 years. Dissatisfied with the results from oral contraceptives, antibiotics, and other conventional treatments, Dr. Jen decided to take matters into her own hands and find a safer and more sustainable solution to achieve healthy, glowing skin. Welcome, Dr. Newell. I'm so excited to have you.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here.
Great. And it sounds like you've gone through, you know, your own skin journey with the hormonal cystic acne, mild rosacea. So many people suffer with those for so long, right? So that sounds like that was your calling to find naturopathic medicine.
Absolutely. It was definitely a big part of my journey to doing what I do and working with the clients that I work with.
I know, I think you have such a unique clinic opening up soon, right? Here in Toronto, where it's really focusing on skin health, but also getting to the root cause as well. So I think a lot of people are really going to benefit from your services. And I want to pick your brain. You know, I do see people with skin disorders, but it's not my area of specialty. But I do support those with like eczema, mild acne, but it sounds like the tools and experience you have can take things to a whole new level. So let's jump into some common concerns when there are hormonal changes. So a lot of our listeners are, you know, entering into perimenopause. Can you talk a little bit about how do hormonal changes influence our skin? Because so many people say, oh, my skin's starting to sag, or it's getting, you know, more wrinkles or dry. So what's happening with our hormones?
Yeah, so there's a lot of factors that come into play with how our skin ages. And hormones do, especially for women, hormones do play a huge part in that. As we're heading towards menopause, or those changes are becoming more significant with our hormones, for example, estrogen is decreasing slightly, the frequency and regularity of ovulation changes, which changes our progesterone values as well. And what we start to see with women is that we'll almost see this resurgence or reoccurrence of symptoms or concerns that they may have had during puberty as well, where we will see things like acne resurface for some women. A lot of women will notice their skin gets drier, and that is a significant impact of the estrogen levels within the skin. As our estrogen levels decline, our skin loses its flexibility, and we see this increase in what's known as transepidermal water loss, meaning that more water can escape through the skin and exit so that we are less able to retain that natural moisture within the skin. In addition, collagen and elastin are breaking down, which they do at about a 1% rate per year after about the age of 25. And so when we lose those, that architecture that holds our skin up and keeps it plump and useful and youthful, that's when we start to see this loss of volume, a little bit of sagging, the loss of elasticity. We also see as women get a bit older is we see bone loss, just the same as we would with like osteoporosis or bone loss throughout the body. We do also see this in our facial bones, where they lose some of their integrity and they start to decrease in size and shape just slightly, but enough that we will see structural changes in how our face looks.
Wow. So there's so many things going on. I've never heard about the transdermal water loss. So that's good to note. And then, you know, it sounds too bad because I guess our skin's peak age would be 25 then if we're starting to lose collagen and elastin by 1% since then. So, oh my gosh, I'm 42 and I haven't really done, you know, very specific things to help my skin. So I can't wait to get into that. Of course, obviously I try to eat a healthy diet and avoid things that might accelerate aging. But so would 25 be the peak age of when our skin is the best?
It's around, well, I mean, there's a whole other slew of concerns at that age, but it's an age where it's at its peak with regards to regeneration. It's healing at its best, unless there's lifestyle factors coming into play. The collagen elastin has sort of hit its peak for its regeneration properties, though there are ways to sustain that longer. So yeah, at about that time, we start to see this gradual decline. Not to say that it will be significant, and there's so many things that we can do to retain those things, but it is when we do start to see shifts for women that we see our skin changing.
For sure. Yeah, you mentioned acne can be a concern. Would that typically be like on the jawline where we, you know, usually think of hormonal acne as being a problem, or do you see it other areas of the face or body even?
We definitely see it throughout different areas. So as women get a bit older as well, our testosterone levels can change, and that can lead to changes in localized androgen or the conversion of those hormones within the skin. So we will sometimes see body acne that women have never had before, whether it's on the chest or the back. We'll also see that typical jawline or beard area where we would see hormonally driven acne as well. But some women will start to notice acne in areas that they may not associate with hormonal changes. Along the hairline is a really common area. And that's partially, I think, due to changes in skin density, as well as immune function and resistance to infectious agents. But also, I think we start to do more things with regard to coloring our hair, using new products, and those all contribute to build up congestion and inflammatory responses within the skin.
I never thought of that before, especially around the hairline, if those chemicals are really impacting what's going on with the skin. And, you know, as a naturopathic doctor, yourself and I, we're always looking at what are the causes and then trying to avoid those as much as possible. Before we get into some other things we can do for skin health, what are some other concerns you see as women enter into perimenopause with their skin?
Yeah, so skin tone in general is something that I see a lot as women start to enter into perimenopause. They're at the prime age where you're starting to see sun damage. So seeing those dark spots or sunspots, as we so lovingly call them, on the cheekbones or on the forehead, that's due to sun damage that occurred 20 to 30 years prior, that now it's starting to be visible. And it's hard to go back and tell past self to do things. So now we have to move forward with regards to correction. We also see at this age, a lot of women have gone through pregnancies, and we do see things like melasma showing up and being a concern. So hyperpigmentation on the face due to hormonal shifts as well. And then just those general signs of aging, increased redness, more visible blood vessels near the surface of the skin, all become much more noticeable as we see that collagen and elastin loss, as we see that architecture break down.
Right. Yeah. And does the melasma last for some women too, do you find, after they have given birth?
Absolutely. It can be very persistent because as soon as your body lays down melanin and pigment, it can be really tricky to break up that melanin and prevent it from coming back and being continuous and being consistent and regular for them. Anytime they're exposed to heat or sun, that pigment can flare up and become more prominent and visible as well.
Yeah. And mentioning that the sun exposure, you know, from 20 to 30 years prior, that's probably me because I was a sun baby. My parents had a pool. We would swim for the whole summer and be outside all day. So I'm starting to see some of those sunspots. I have a lot of moles. So I think that's a big concern for a lot of women. And now people are practicing safer sun, but it's still, you know, where the ozone layer is so thin and the sun exposure is so strong that it can still be an issue. So obviously prevention is key as much as possible, right? So what would be some top tips on how to prevent the signs of aging and to prevent like that sun damage?
Yeah. So like you said, prevention is so key. And I think that's a very clear tenet in all of what naturopaths do is really we want to prevent things from worsening or occurring for our patients as well as treating acute concerns. But when it comes to skin, there's what we call prejuvenation. And that's the early looking at the concerns that we would typically see rather than just rejuvenation and going back and correcting. But some of the best things you can do to prevent those signs of aging are being mindful of things. Getting sunscreen into your regular daily routine as early as possible. If I could go back and tell 12-year-old me to wear sunscreen every day, I would 100% take that opportunity to time travel and do that. But we can't go back in time and do that, but it's never too late to create new habits. It's never too late to start integrating a sunscreen that is cosmetically elegant, that you like the texture of, that is easy to remember into your daily routine. Other things, like you said, that those lifestyle components of eating well, drinking water, managing your stress, all do impact how our skin looks over time. So doing those sort of foundational pieces for well-being is very, very beneficial for your skin. And then making sure that you're using the correct products for your concerns. It is so easy to get sucked into great marketing. We've all been there. We've seen this miracle product online or on TV, and we've just had to buy it. And without really knowing if it's appropriate or right for what our unique goals are.
Right. Yeah. Those are some really great tips. And I like that, you know, you really focus on what we're putting in our body in terms of fluid and food. Cause a lot of times people, you know, have health or have skin concerns and they're like, well, what's the best cream? What's the best skin regime? And not really, you know, looking at these other aspects, even having the sunscreen be part of their routine, applying it a certain time of the day or more frequently too. I don't know if you're able to recommend any specific sunscreens, cause I'm sure that is a question a lot of people have. I know, you know, are you able to answer that or we can put some links in our show notes?
Yeah. So it's interesting because sunscreen is such a personal experience for people. And there's so many different textures, varieties. I lean towards preferring the mineral sunscreens made from zinc and titanium dioxide, but there are some really unique new sunscreen ingredients being developed that while we may not fully have access to them in Canada, based on how sunscreens are regulated as a drug in Canada, I hope that in the future, we will see these more unique ingredients starting to be more easily accessible and integrated into more products, because we're seeing newer formulas becoming easier to integrate into a routine. With regards to sunscreen brands that I particularly love, I'm a big fan of the brand Suntegrity. They're based out of the United States. They are not a regulated sunscreen in Canada. However, I will preface that. They don't have the DIN number that sunscreens are required to have for sale in Canada, but you can still get it. You can purchase it online. You just can't purchase it from a storefront quite often. Their formulas are amazing. They integrate antioxidants into their formulas as well to give an added layer of protection. I also really love the Tizo sunscreens. They have their mineral based ones and then they have their chemical sunscreens. I again lean way towards those mineral options, but their textures are really lovely. And having a good texture means that people are more inclined to use it regularly. Derma E makes some great sunscreens. There's so many great brands out there. The sunscreen company based out of Ottawa, I'm a huge fan of their company ethics as well as their products. The mineral sunscreens are also starting to get less whitening. They create less of a white cast than they used to.
Great, because you see so many people walking around with white on their face. You know, the one we use on my son Stuart, it takes a while to absorb and he's just covered. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, and it's really interesting because like based on right now, there's a lot of discussion about race and ethnicity and equality that those sunscreens that leave a white cast are typically fine for those of us who are very pale, but don't work as well for people of color. And it's something that we do have to consider when formulas are being made is how well can everybody use this?
Really good point. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. So I'm glad these things that are, they're all being put into consideration when sunscreens and skin products are being made. So, and do you recommend like frequent application of sunscreen, or how often should we be reapplying?
Yeah, it really depends on what you're doing. So if you're someone like me right now working from home, I'm in a room with a window. So I put sunscreen on this morning when I was doing my skincare routine. I'll likely touch it up midday, or if I go outside later, I'll do another application. But the sunscreen is broken down from that sun exposure. It's also broken down from us touching our faces, which luckily we're more aware now than ever before not to do. But with mask wearing and those factors, that does also rub off the sunscreen that we've applied. So reapplication is valuable. If you're out on a beach right now, every 2 hours is pretty much the standard. But again, that depends on the color of your skin and the activities that you're doing. If you're someone like me who's very, very fair, I tend to burn fairly rapidly. And so my reapplication will be different than someone else who does not burn as quickly, because that SPF number is really about the time you can spend in the sun before you get a burn or damage.
Right. Yeah, good point too, because I don't think a lot of people realize that the UV rays can go through windows, right? They're like, I'm in the car, I'm in the house, I don't need to apply it, but you apply it in the morning when you're sitting near your window. So I think that's a really key tip for people to incorporate.
And, yeah, even, and those UV rays are really different. So the UVB rays, which are ones that burn the skin that we think of as sun exposure, those ones are typically blocked by our windows. So sitting by my window in my office, I'm probably not going to get a sunburn. However, the UVA rays, which are the ones that age us, are able to penetrate. They're also able to penetrate cloudy skies. And so typically clouds in the sky only block about 20% of those rays. So again, the rays that can age us are just constant.
Totally. Yeah. And then even being aware of, yeah, if you're wearing a mask too, because that can impact the sunscreen's effect to protect you. So all really great tips, especially during this time too. So let's shift gears a little bit. So we talked about, you know, sunscreen and prevention with water and food. Are there certain foods that can protect our skin more than others? You know, you hear people talk about eat more lycopene, and that can act as an internal sunscreen, or, you know, there's some antioxidants that people purport will prevent sun damage or burns.
Yeah, so there are definitely foods you can integrate that will reduce the risk and increase the duration with which you can spend in the sun before you get damaged. That would be things like lycopene, astaxanthin, stronger antioxidants from, and polyphenols are all really beneficial. So those healthy for a lot of reasons, brightly colored fruits and vegetables are all very protective. They don't replace the use of sunscreen. However, they can give you added duration and also improve how the skin cells repair, because those antioxidants are there to protect your cellular DNA. So what happens when you're exposed to sun rays and the rays from the sun and UVA and UVB rays is that free radicals are generated. Free radicals are generated whether we're breathing or walking. A lot of things will generate them, but those free radicals are electrons that lack, or sorry, they lack an electron. So they're unstable and they go seeking an electron. They're oxygen species that lack that electron. And so the antioxidants are donating an electron to stabilize these oxygen molecules. However, when there aren't sufficient antioxidants, those free radicals will look for those electrons elsewhere. And that's where we get cellular DNA damage that leads to things like the development of moles or nevi, where we see the breakdown of collagen and elastin is that it's essentially stealing an electron. So when you take in those antioxidants, you're giving it a sacrifice, basically.
Great. So it can take that as opposed to damaging the skin in the process.
Exactly.
So you mentioned, yeah, lycopene. I never know how to say astaxanthin. That's always
I remember that one. Astaxanthin is my favorite because it's what makes flamingos pink.
Oh, okay.
So I just love that random fact.
That's great that you know that. What would be some good food sources of these antioxidants then?
Yeah. So like I said, any of those brightly colored fruits and vegetables, pomegranates, blueberries, green tea has a great antioxidant component. Leafy greens, anything with a bright and vibrant color. Tomatoes have that lycopene. So really you're looking for bright colors, which also makes your plate a lot more fun.
Definitely. Yeah, you get lots of good flavors. It looks pretty. You can take those Instagram photos. So it's great to incorporate those foods. And, you know, pesticides and non-organic, you know, we know don't have the same nutritional value. But does the pesticides have action on our skin?
We haven't seen a ton of research into that. I would assume there can be some impact because of further oxidative damage from consuming something that your body just doesn't know what to do with. And I have seen cases in patients where we do see skin reactions like rashes, irritation, and itchiness from exposure, whether it's orally or topically, to pesticides and those chemicals used within gardening or farming and agriculture. But right. The research is really lacking, unfortunately.
Okay. Yeah, I've seen people, you know, if they eat non-organic apples, their lips and mouth become really itchy. But yeah, you're saying, yeah, some people can still have reactions, but then looking at it probably more from a nutrient devoid perspective of those foods. So, and then that wouldn't be serving the skin because they wouldn't have the same antioxidant levels if they were non-organic.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Great. And then shifting to some fluids, you know, I'm sure there's things we consume that accelerate aging in skin products and different drinks we have that obviously water being, you know, probably the top one that can really support skin health. What are some fluids we should avoid or liquids and ones that are good for our skin?
Yeah. And I tend to lean on a very moderate way of thinking. And I don't think there should be a hard and fast, like, never consume this ever again, because there's some value socially, emotionally for certain things. So ideally, excessive coffee consumption is not great for the skin. It can amplify and accelerate that dryness, that transepidermal water loss and dehydration of the skin. However, I think of it as a great source of antioxidants as well. So it's not an easy, like, never consume this ever again. It's no hard and fast rule, but definitely watch the amount that you're consuming. Coffee can also trigger more oily skin and breakouts due to its ability to stimulate the adrenal glands and those stress hormones and cortisol release. However, again, like I said, I don't think there should be like a hard and fast, like, never drink it again. I think choose good quality and enjoy it and sit and drink it mindfully. Same with things like alcohol, wine, spirits, liquors, not great for the skin, very dehydrating. However, again, moderation is key. Binge drinking, not a great option for a lot of reasons with regards to our health, but particularly not great for the skin. But I think there is benefit for the social aspect of things as well. So again, I don't want to be like, yeah, never have this.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that. So it's not, yeah, it's doing it in moderation and looking at why you're doing it. Yeah, are you just having a moderate amount and having it during social time? Or is it turning to binge drinking? Is it an escape for something? So what is the reason behind it? I love that.
And I think there's value in that mindful consumption. Sit. Mm-hmm. Enjoy it, savor it. Don't chug it back or not realize even what you're drinking, but actually enjoy it.
Yeah, no keg stands, no funneling.
Yeah.
Forget
probably
that.
Probably not a great option.
Probably not. And then are there any teas? So you mentioned green tea as really high in antioxidants. Mm-hmm. Any herbal teas that you recommend that are good for the skin or other caffeinated teas?
I love herbal teas for the skin because it's an easy way to integrate A, hydration, and B, herbal medicine, basically, into your routine. So herbal teas, like, I really love nettle for the skin, really high in minerals, which I find a lot of people are lacking. Great for anyone who's prone to an allergic type response to their skin, which again is something as we get closer to menopause, a lot of women notice that their skin is much more allergenic or reactive to allergens than before. And it's the histamine, the cells, those mast cells are just much more fragile as we get older. Again, I think due to the fluid loss, the lack of architecture around them that stabilizes them well. So things like nettle are great. Hibiscus is quite good for the skin. There's reports that it can help with the formation of lines and wrinkles because it delivers a lot of antioxidants. That being said, you want to exercise caution when you consume it and don't overdo it because it can lead to changes in blood pressure for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Oh, those sound like great ones. Yeah, they're both delicious.
And they're great. And they're pretty too. And they're not gross because there's definitely some herbal teas out there that are not palatable.
Right.
And so we want you to enjoy the process.
Add some lemon, add some fresh lime. Yeah, those sound delicious. You can drink them iced this time of the year.
Yeah, so ice is really good. Especially I find a lot of herbal teas just taste better cold. Mm-hmm. So I find a lot of people, if they don't like them, if we can encourage them to drink them iced, it can make it much more palatable.
Totally. And I think when you mentioned reduces wrinkles hibiscus, I think everybody's going to go out and buy that one.
Yeah. Again, exercise caution. Some people are really reactive in terms of it dropping their blood pressure. Mm-hmm. So if you drink a lot of it, notice that like when you go from sitting to standing, you get super dizzy, maybe pull back on it a little bit. Sure. Things like spearmint is another great one for the skin. Licorice root, again, another good one, and naturally sweet.
Great. So people have some options to try there as well. Fantastic. And then so wrinkles, it sounds like from what you said before, so it could be due to the bone changes, also the hormonal changes that affect the, you know, elastin, collagen. Is that kind of why we get wrinkles too? Like the bones shrink, the skin becomes weaker. Is there any other phenomenon that contributes to it? Yeah.
So the fat pads within our skin actually decrease as well. So when you're a baby, if you think about a baby's face, it's all round and squishy and plump, and what we call baby fat are actually deposits of fat in structural places within our skin. And as we get older, those also shrink in our face. That's where when they're doing things like injectable fillers, they're essentially trying to replace what would have been there with natural fat deposits. When they're building up things like cheekbones and chins, is that they're actually trying to rejig the architecture a little bit. It's really tough to replenish bone and fat in your face. There's very few topical agents that will do that, but it's also understanding how our physiology, how our anatomy, how that changes as we get older, and accepting it, embracing it, and celebrating it.
Right. Calling them wisdom lines as opposed to wrinkles.
It's a great word. I also think the term anti-aging, it's hard to think of a better term, but I think more of it with regards to age management, is that it is a privilege to age that some people do not get. And I think that while we don't have to be 100% embracing and loving the changes that we see, we also have to celebrate and honor what they mean. If you have lines around your eyes, I tell people that means you've smiled a lot in your life. And that's amazing.
That's a great way to look at it. We're always, you know, a lot of times we're trying to fight aging, but looking at embracing it. And yeah, I would rather have laugh lines because I was laughing and happy most of my life as opposed to stoic and non-responsive, but I had perfect skin.
Exactly.
And then that's too bad about the fat loss though, because a lot of times we're battling fat gain in certain areas. We can't lose it from the belly, but we're losing it from the skin. So that's too bad. But
interesting because there are new developments with like fat transfer where they are taking fat from other areas and putting it into the face. Early days on that, but it is very interesting sort of what we're able and what innovations are coming and what things we'll be able to do down the road.
Fascinating. I don't know if I'd want to go through that process, but some people may feel like it's worth it. But interesting what science is doing.
Everyone's on a different spot or place on a spectrum of what they are willing to or open to or eager to try. And I think acceptance of where you're at and being able to talk to people about those different options and help them make an informed choice on things is valuable. No.
Great tips. We talked about some really good foods to get in. What are some of the worst foods for our skin?
Sugar. Mm-hmm. I hate to say it because I love sweet things, but sugar really promotes that breakdown of the collagen elastin. It just keeps the collagen elastin from forming in a proper structure, so it makes it weaker. it's really that those blood sugar irregularities really do age the skin very quickly. So sugar is not great for the skin. That being said, again, I think in moderation, we have to look at it.
Mm-hmm. No, that makes sense. So that would be the worst offender, obviously.
Pretty much the worst offender. Sugar and sun, are the two biggest factors with regards to how women age. And I mean, genetics plays a role there as well. But the things that we kind of can control a little bit is that sun exposure and sugar intake.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that makes sense. And then in terms of other lifestyle behaviors, you know, such as smoking or anything else that can really negatively influence our skin, you know, even our environment, like what would be some lifestyle habits or behaviors we could work on?
Yes, quitting smoking is really, really good for your skin. In that smoking develops those lines that come with repeated facial expressions. So those lines around the mouth will develop more strongly in those who smoke because you're making that expression more. We also see that the smoke touching or being connected to the skin is that we're seeing more of that oxidative damage that the antioxidants can't always keep up with. So quitting smoking is really a good choice for your skin if you want to preserve the health of your skin, because we've also found that it creates almost like a hypoxia within the skin. When you smoke, your skin gets less oxygen. So you'll never really have that healthy glow that comes with proper oxygenation and nourishment to your cells within your skin if you are a smoker. I think lifestyle-wise, being active is great, but there are activities that will age you as well. So if you're someone who's spending more time outside being active, sunscreen is even more important. So there are lifestyle factors that do contribute. Stress is a huge ager, simply because it takes a lot of oxidative stress, that peripheral circulation that sends blood and oxygen-rich blood to your skin just isn't as efficient when you're under a lot of stress.
Mm-hmm. No, really good. Yeah, really good points there. And people don't always see the skin as an organ, right? So it does have blood flow. It is getting delivered oxygen and nutrients. So I never thought of, the smoking affecting it in that way. I just thought more of like the actual damage from the smoke itself or the position, like you said, of the mouth when someone's smoking a cigarette.
Yeah, it's a really interesting thing is that we often regard the skin as simply just a cosmetic component of our well-being. But it is our biggest organ, and we need to look at it as an indicator of our well-being and our health, because our skin gives us really great signs when something is off, but also we have to treat it like an organ.
Mm-hmm. Really good point. Really good point. Are there medications that are more damaging to the skin than others? Of course, we're not telling people to stop them, but just be aware if they may have negative effects with aging or skin health.
Yeah, I see a lot of like skin concerns come from or become aggravated by certain medications. I've seen it with things like antidepressants very commonly can cause more breakouts or changes in the skin. And unfortunately, it's a really commonly prescribed medication to women going through menopause and perimenopause. So we do see that. So looking at it from that perspective, like you said, I don't think it's a reason to say like, let's discontinue this thing that's been very, very helpful for you. But also we need to look at how do we support you so that you aren't getting the side effects from it that are common. Things like medications for diabetes. We see that with the blood sugar irregularities. If you're someone who's managing blood sugar with frequent dosing of insulin, then we need to look at how do we manage your blood sugar and keep it more stable so that you need fewer doses of your medication if possible. So lots of factors come into play with skin, and it's hard to always predict, and it's not often the side effect listed on those medications for people.
Right. Yeah. It's looking at what was your health and skin like before you started it, what happened when you started it, you know, what are the benefits, what are the potential side effects you're experiencing? So just being really aware of that.
And skin is one of those things that either will respond to things very, very quickly with regards to things like an allergy, you'll get hives quite rapidly. But when it's something like its appearance, how those cells are turning over, it takes time. Those cells are going through a life cycle of their own. And so if you're addressing or seeing changes happen at the very base of that, it takes a little bit of time before it shows up on the surface where we can actually see it. And so sometimes those changes are very, very subtle. So it's harder to connect it with like, oh, I did this and this was the result, that it can be much more subtle.
Mm-hmm. I think we live in an age or society where we expect results pretty quickly. So I'm glad you brought that up, because even when you change, you know, what you're eating or drinking or doing to support your skin health, it could take, you know, several months to start to see the effects. And it's not a sign it's not working if it doesn't kick in right away. So you kind of need to stick to these changes.
Yeah, it's definitely a journey. And like you said, I think we're in a societal state where we want those immediate results, but the skin, we have to support its life cycle. It's not like, it's not so simple as just like, let's burn off the layer of skin and we'll get a new one as immediately. Is that restoration and those changes at a cellular level take time.
For sure. No, that's important to note. We talked about medications that could affect the skin, different foods to eat and avoid. Are there any top or vitamins that we should think about talking to our healthcare practitioner about taking to support skin health?
Yeah, I see a lot of people benefit from additional antioxidants and polyphenols supplementally. Whether it's the astaxanthin, lycopene, all of those can come in a supplemental form. It is good and best to talk to a person about this prior, or like a professional, prior to initiating a new supplement routine. But antioxidants in general, CoQ10, really great skin antioxidant. Things like quercetin can be very helpful. So I think it's very easy to say, here's some overarching benefits, but it's much more beneficial to do it in a strategic manner at the right dose for the person individually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's key to note as well. So we, you know, you can go to a health food store and go to the skin section and pull off whatever you want from the shelf. And I have so many people, you know, taking different products like Biosil or with silica and biotin and expecting that to be the only thing they have to do. But, you know, as we're talking about, it's really key to get to the root cause, or root causes more likely in most cases to see the biggest benefits.
Yeah, it's definitely, I've seen some great benefit from the health food store aisle. And I've also seen things go terribly, terribly wrong for people with regards to their skin, where they've started a product because they heard it was great and didn't look into whether it was appropriate for them. And we've seen the skin do all sorts of crazy things. For one of the best examples of that is biotin. Biotin in very high doses, while it's promoted as a hair, skin, and nails formula, in high doses, it can aggravate deep cystic painful acne for people. Because of how it interacts with our B vitamins. So it is really much safer and better to consult with a professional prior to just starting something.
Definitely. And you mentioned CoQ10. I've been seeing it a lot in skincare products. What would be good topical skincare product ingredients to look for? And then if we can get into kind of a skincare regime, like what's good to do with your cleansing and moisturizing as we get into our 40s and beyond.
Man, I could talk about this for days. with regards to ingredients, again, it's like a supplement, but we're putting it topically. So I think there are times where it's best to consult with a professional about what ingredients will deliver the results that you are looking for. One of the ones that I think is the most researched ingredient is a retinoid, so a vitamin A derivative. And there is a lot of controversy around retinoids. Places like Environmental Working Group and Think Dirty will automatically give anything with a retinoid, whether it's retinoic acid, retinaldehyde, retinol, a bad rating. That being said, that bad rating comes from one very poorly done study where rats were covered in a vitamin A, a retinoic acid, and then put under sun. And they're like, oh, it increases the risk of skin cancer. Well, vitamin A in a regime, a skincare regime, should be used at night and in the right formula. And so sometimes you have to dig a little deeper into the research, unfortunately. And a lot of people don't have the time, the energy, or the ability to do that. And so I love retinoids, but I love them in the right formula for the person. I'm a big fan of things like retinaldehyde. It's gentle, it has to be converted by the skin cells to be useful. Retinoids help to preserve the texture of the skin. They can be used to prevent things like acne by preventing clogged pores. They help with hyperpigmentation. So I think a good retinol product of the right formula can be very, very beneficial when used properly. I think also when we look at aging, antioxidants in skincare are great. Vitamin C has some really solid research. Again, the form that it's in and the formula can make a difference. But yeah, there's other antioxidants that are really great as well. And there is some research showing that they can regenerate and renew one another. So using something with more than just vitamin C can actually be more beneficial. If you're someone struggling with pigmentation, topical glutathione is amazing. It just smells terrible. And it's hard to stabilize in a formula.
Right, it has that sulfur smell, that rotten egg smell.
It's not appealing in skincare, but there are now companies that are working on that stabilization, reducing the fragrance of it. That is how it naturally smells. I like to look at things like green tea extract is great in a formula, especially for aging skin. I do love vitamin C as much as I'm like, there's other antioxidants out there. Vitamin C is fantastic. Niacinamide, if you're anyone who's dealing with redness or dryness or want to restore that barrier function to prevent that transepidermal water loss, niacinamide is a great ingredient. So again, it's almost like selecting a topical supplement or medication and treating it as such. And the delivery system for that organ just happens to be that we put it directly on it.
Mm-hmm. There needs to be it has to be the right time, be for the right condition. And then a lot of the over-the-counter products say they have like CoQ10 or vitamin C, but then they're full of all these chemicals too, right? So you're not talking about those products.
And everything is a chemical. So I hate the like, this is chemical free. That's a big pet peeve of mine because literally water is a chemical. Everything is a chemical. What we want to avoid are those that may put us at risk down the road, those that don't have sufficient research behind them, though there are very strict and stringent research put into skincare formulas. And I think there is a lot of misconceptions with regards to certain ingredients and what they can, cannot do to the skin and to our health. But I think formulating your own list of things that you would rather avoid can be empowering. And I think learning about the different ingredients, and just because you can't pronounce something does not mean it's not a good ingredient, does not mean it's not a safe ingredient. So I think it's a lot about education, proper guidance, and empowerment in that field.
Do you have a good resource or website to start to look up these ingredients? I know a lot of people use EWG or Environmental Working Group, but again, being cautious.
I find Environmental Working Group has quite a few flaws, unfortunately.
Okay.
They do push a bit of an agenda and they aren't following necessarily best research, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. That being said, it is a good starting point. But then if there's certain ingredients where you're like, oh, they give this a bad rating, dig into why. If you've got the time and the inclination, like check out the research, go beyond just the abstract. Because quite often you'll actually see like, oh, this is one study done in a massive dose on mice. How does that translate with how I'm using this ingredient? How does it translate with how I'm using the product? Most recently, there was research into sunscreen and they're like, oh, it enters your bloodstream in less than a day. But what they didn't, when I read the research, it was like, oh, the person was covering like 90% of their body in it and reapplying frequently, going through two bottles in a day and a half, basically. And I'm like, that is actual usage of the product. None of us would actually be using it in that way.
Right.
And so it makes the research tricky for the average individual to dig through, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. So is there any better resource than others?
Yeah. So Paula's Choice, it's a skincare company, but they do give links to the research behind the ingredients. They have a very nice balanced approach to it, which I think is quite valuable. There's a podcast called The Eco Well, which some people in the natural health world may not love them because they do debunk a lot of myths that we are taught and some of the paradigms that we support. But I think challenging those belief systems is so valuable too. So EcoWell, their podcast is fantastic to challenge those viewpoints a little bit.
great. I haven't heard of those, so I'll have to check them both out. And we never know everything all at once, right? Things are constantly changing, science constantly changing. So I think we need to be open to new research and new ways of thinking about things. If someone's not, then they probably don't know that much.
Well, and I think it's interesting because like the natural health world, we tend to think of things sort of black and white. And unfortunately, things are very gray in that, oh, we don't like these preservatives in here. So parabens got such a bad rap in terms of like, oh, avoid parabens, they're so bad for you. Except then I think and there've been so many cases of natural skincare products where they've been contaminated with bacteria or mold because they haven't been properly preserved, that there's a toss-up. I'd rather safe and stable products sometimes that have been preserved properly than the risk of, okay, here's a more natural preservative, but there's a higher chance that bacteria will grow. It's hard to decide what matters.
Right. And that's individual for each person. So I like that idea of writing down, what would be ingredients you want to avoid and looking at products that align with that.
Yeah. And that can definitely be done with a professional support too. So example, like when I do an intake, I'll ask people like family health history, their own personal health history, because based on that, there may be ingredients that are better or worse for them, better to avoid or that don't matter as much. And so if we can put together a plan and a strategy, then people feel more empowered to go out and try new products and have confidence in that selection.
You really do offer, it sounds like, individualized skincare, even in terms of picking out the specific products based on someone's family history. So I love that. But the next question, maybe it's hard to answer then, but I'm sure there's no one skincare regime for everybody. But if someone's entering perimenopause or noticing hormonal shifts in aging and wrinkling, we hear so much about cleansing, toning, moisturizing, eye cream, night cream. Is there kind of a base regime to follow or think about?
Yeah, I think when we're putting together a plan, that the bare minimum, you want a good cleanser that works for your skin type. You don't want anything that's going to be too stripping or too aggressive or too abrasive. So using something gentle, especially going through perimenopause, you can go to gentler skincare products. You don't need the really drying products that are typically marketed towards acne that really don't help anybody's skin in the long run. But going with something gentle, I like things that are as fragrance-free as possible, that may just not have any added fragrance, but smell like the ingredients that are in there. So a good cleanser is really key. A sunscreen that you like, that you can remember to put on regularly. And then I think sometimes having just a really good moisturizer
is great. Yeah, so keeping it simple, but making sure each of those are high quality and right for your skin. So really sitting down.
Yeah. Always add things in. So if you're someone who now wants to target very specific concerns, now we can use something like a serum as a more specific treatment for whether a period of time or used sort of as needed.
Mm-hmm. No, great way to do it then. So very specific and individualized. So we don't have to get overwhelmed. Definitely the sun exposure, having a good sunscreen for your face and body is key. And then having a gentle cleanser and a good moisturizer that feels good. I love that.
Yeah. And I think, the temptation now with like the advent of Korean skincare routines and all these product lines where you can buy 15 products for $20, I think it might be overkill. I think if we can keep things very, very simple and very strategic and use products that are very purposeful in our routine, then we can save ourselves time and money and frustration in the long run.
Definitely. What are your thoughts on oil cleansing the skin?
Yeah. So I love oil cleansing when used as a double cleanse. Oil is great because it can break down sunscreen, it can break down heavier makeup, it can actually help with allowing you to properly remove those things. However, it breaks it down, but if you aren't actually cleansing off the oil, that residue and residual makeup, sunscreen is just still sitting on your skin. It's just been moved. So as a double cleanse routine, it's really great.
Okay. Oh, good to know. So it gets rid of the stuff on your skin you don't want there, but then you obviously need to wash that off as well with like another cleanser.
Yeah. It basically just like breaks down the ingredients, but you still have to remove them.
Okay. And not just with water, something that's actually like a cleanser.
Yeah. Sounds like you need something that's going to emulsify it a little bit.
Yeah. And one more like hot thing out there for skin right now, and if you will, anti-aging, I know that's not a great term and I don't like it either, but ingesting collagen, you know, adding collagen powder to smoothies or food is a big rage right now. Do we actually get benefit from ingesting collagen orally?
It depends. And it's one of those, it's so, I feel like that's like all of my answers. Well, it depends on the person. Because it does. It totally depends on the person. And collagen is a really hot supplement. And we'll treat it like a supplement. But is it really worth the hype? Do we absorb it? Do we assimilate it? Collagen is a protein that's found in our connective tissue in the body, particularly our skin, hair, nails, and joints. It is now sort of in that realm of anti-aging. And marketing campaigns definitely are promoting it more. It is not a complete protein. So if you are using it as like a supplemental protein in your health routine, then it may not be the best option. But collagen is about 90% of the dry weight of our skin. It builds that scaffolding. It allows the structure. Collagen, when used topically, may give a little bit of like hydration, but it's a very large molecule, so it doesn't actually pass through the skin to reach the dermal layer, which is the layer beneath the epidermis that is that architectural layer. So topical creams that have collagen in it don't do a ton simply because it can't get to where we would need it to go. Supplemental collagen, when consumed, there have been some animal studies showing that oral consumption of collagen does get to the skin. They've had studies where a radio-labeled collagen peptide is consumed and they follow those collagen peptides and have found that they remain elevated in the skin for up to 2 weeks. Those peptides are absorbed intact from the GI tract when using a hydrolyzed collagen and will peak in the bloodstream after about 2 hours, but will remain slightly elevated for about 4 hours. But basically, when we absorb it, our body goes into seeing these peptides or these components of collagen, the amino acids that they break down into, and the body thinks that somewhere we've broken down our own collagen in a very rapid manner. So it goes into a repair process because our bodies are smart. They want to rebuild when they think something's been damaged. So when your body sees this influx of collagen peptides, it thinks, oh crap, somewhere it's breaking down. I'm going to upregulate my production. So it may be taking the amino acids from the collagen you've consumed or from the sandwich you ate earlier or other areas and start trying to upregulate that production naturally. So there is some benefit. I don't think, and I think people think that they drink it and it goes right to their skin, but it's a multi-stepped process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's triggering that repair, regeneration, or rebuilding. That's so fascinating. Exactly. You've obviously done a lot of research into the science behind it. So thank you for sharing that. So, and you know, it does depend a lot of these things, like you said. So it's a gray area. It can benefit some people, but not everybody. Yeah. But I don't think it's
a miracle.
Yeah,
that's what people think it's going to be. And I don't think it's a miracle. And you can't selectively be like, I consumed this collagen that's for my skin. Well, your body doesn't know the difference between where your skin was and your joints. So it might actually be more benefit to your knees or other places. So it's interesting. Yeah, I noticed when I consume collagen, my knees are less creaky.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, so I notice a huge difference in my hair, skin, or nails. Not massive, but like my knees feel better. So I'll take it.
For sure. It's not causing you any harm. So that's good. And it's just important to remember skin issues, supporting skin health is multifactorial. So it's not going to be that magic pill, that magic bullet.
And also recognizing like if you start taking it and you do notice side effects, then it may not be the right option for you. I do know some people who will, when they consume it, because it's not a complete protein, and lacks tryptophan, some people do notice a slight worsening of depression symptoms with it. Mm. So it is important to note that it can potentially cause some harm for some people.
Good to note, definitely. I know this is a huge topic, but one other skin concern that comes up with hormonal changes is perioral dermatitis. Did you want to talk a little bit just about what triggers that and what's kind of a path people can take to start to address it?
So many triggers. Perioral dermatitis is basically like if acne and eczema had a love child. in that people try and treat it like acne and it makes it worse, and then they try and treat it like eczema and it makes it worse. It can be triggered by hormonal shifts. I see a lot of women will get it on the birth control pill or when they switch pills or come off. We don't know the exact cause of perioral dermatitis, but we do see it triggered by certain things like topical and nasal steroid use. Or inhaled steroids for things like asthma will trigger it for some people. I think stress plays a role for a lot of people. There is some connection with fluoride consumption, so I have a few patients that will get a breakout of it after seeing the dentist if fluoride has been applied. So it's not an easy cut and dry response, but there are some factors that come in. And we used to think of it as just a concern that would occur in childhood, but I am seeing very persistent cases of PD or perioral dermatitis in adults now.
Mm-hmm. So we have multifactorial with the hormones, possibly a reaction to fluoride, for example, stress. So yeah, very complicated. So definitely see Dr. Jen, see your naturopathic doctor to address the root causes of that. Okay. So we have,
So interesting.
Pardon me?
So interesting because so many factors, like any skin concern is not so simple.
Totally. So you've really, I think, laid down some good foundational knowledge about how we can support our skin as we go through perimenopause and beyond. So thank you so much for sharing all of that useful information. And now we'll switch gears to the second part of the podcast. So I know right now you have a fur baby, you don't have any human baby. So I won't ask you your super mom moment or your mom mess up, but I can ask you as it pertains to your skin, what's the best thing we can do for our skin if you had to pick one?
Best thing you can do for your skin is wear sunscreen.
Great. Yep. I think you've really driven that home and it's so important. I wish I could go back to my 12-year-old self as well, but you know, we can't.
Yeah. If someone created a time travel machine, I think that would be the first thing I would do.
Love it. And then what's the worst thing that we could do for our skin?
I think not respecting it. We tend to do too many things to our skin. We peel it, we scrub it, we rough it up, we aggressively treat it. And I think sometimes we just have to take a step back and be gentle and kind to it.
I love that. I love that. A lot of people fight with their skin. They get angry with it. You know, one exercise I get people to do if they have some skin issues is to just write a letter to their skin and write it as if it was they're writing a letter to a friend. You know, it sounds kind of out there, but just recognizing it needs some loving kindness as well.
It absolutely does.
And do you have one skin essential that you can't live without?
Oh, I have so many things. Yeah, I am a product junkie, which is why I love researching ingredients. I've got like a whole like menu of sunscreens that I go between, but I think the one thing that I would be hard pressed to not have in my routine is my cleanser, because I can get away with like nothing else, but if I can't cleanse my skin, it just doesn't feel healthy. Again, I also have a menu of various cleansers so that I can pick and choose based on what my skin is doing, but I love a good like creamy milk cleanser. I think if I was only going to use one thing for the rest of my life, that would be it.
Okay. Sounds luxurious. And you know, it's good to hear that you do have different cleansers. So depending on maybe the time of the year, month or the season. So exactly. It's always good to switch it up. Good to
know. You can have like, I think what we'll probably see in the future is someone's going to come out with a skincare products based on where you are in your menstrual cycle, because your skin changes. So in the second half of my cycle, my skin is definitely a bit more oily. And what I was using in the first half is not always as appropriate.
Right. Yeah, really good point, because we think we just pick one and you stick with that for years and years on end. So I love that. So thanks for sharing. And then I'll go through my super mom moment. So I guess as it pertains to skin, we started off not bathing Stuart daily. So I think that's a super mom moment because a lot of times we think we have to scrub our kids every day, you know, if they're dirty, give them a bath. But we were really trying to protect the integrity of his skin and use gentle, non-scented cleansers, very minimal amounts, more to kind of wash his hair. But I think that's really helping his skin look better and be less reactive. And then a mom mess up for me, I guess not really paying too much attention to my skincare regime. I kind of just use, you know, what's on sale from, you know, the Big Carrot in the cosmetics section, but I'm really going to check out your natural derm store. We'll talk about that in a minute, Dr. Jen, about the options there. And I think getting an individualized skincare regime is really key as well. And then my mama must have is definitely hand cream right now with all the hand sanitizing and hand washing I'm doing. I'm loving the Consonant hand cream. I don't know what you think of that, one, but yeah, it's so luxurious.
That like dry finish on it.
Yes, yes.
Love that. Especially if you're putting gloves on as a healthcare practitioner, having something that will dry down that you can actually do that is really key.
Totally. Yes. It's absorbed really quickly. So I'm loving that. So thanks again for joining us, Dr. Jen Newell. How can people find you? And then I think you have a little offer that you wanted to share our listeners too.
Yeah. So people can find me at the new clinic that's about to open in Toronto at www.connectedhealthandskin.com. They can also find me personally on Instagram at NewellND. I share a ton of information there because really if I can educate people and they don't need me, I've done my job. And then, yeah, so I try and share and educate as much as possible on those platforms.
I love it. Congratulations on opening the new clinic soon. I can't wait to see it.
So excited about it. It's beautiful.
And then can you tell us about the Natural Derm Store?
Yeah. So naturaldermstore.ca is an e-commerce site that sells healthy, evidence-based skincare and cosmetic products. I worked with them to help curate what they offer and help research new brands and exciting updates in ingredients. And they're just a really great resource for access to effective, research-backed, natural skincare products. And they are have been very good in offering a 15% off discount code to your listeners so they can use the code PERIMENOPAUSE and save 15% off their purchases or orders. And then they can also reach out. The team there is always really happy to help troubleshoot and find the right products for a person's needs.
Oh, great. Great to know. So there's actually support for people to, if they have certain questions, obviously if they have a certain skin condition, they should come see you, see their naturopathic doctor to make specific recommendations, but there's support there if they need help. Exactly. Navigating things. Oh, I love that. Well, you're obviously a wealth of information and expertise. So again, thank you for joining us today. We'll definitely link to your website, the Natural Derm Store, in our show notes and all the other useful resources that you mentioned. And thank you everybody else for joining us today. You can find the show notes at perimenopausalmamas.com and you can connect with us on Facebook and Instagram at perimenopausalmamas. Mamas. We'd love you to subscribe, leave us a review, and a 5-star rating if you enjoyed this episode. And please tell your perimenopausal mama friends about us too. Stay safe, everyone, and thanks again, Dr. Jen.
Thank you.